is no place in this world where I'll belong when I'm gone. And I won't know the right from the wrong when I'm gone. And you won't find me singing on this song when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here.
Estás escuchando el informativo Pacífica.
Si deseas comunicarte con nosotros, puedes escribirnos al correo electrónico pueblosinfronteras@gmail.com.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestra página blog en pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com, donde podrá opinar y encontrar más detalles sobre las noticias de Estados Unidos, América Latina y el mundo desde una perspectiva progresista.
And I won't breathe the bracing air when I'm gone. And I can't even worry about my cares when I'm gone.
En El Salvador, activistas protestaron frente a las oficinas del Banco Mundial para exigirle cambie sus políticas de apoyo a proyectos mineros. El reporte con Merlin Vélez.
Activistas de Aliados Internacionales contra la Explotación Minera y la Mesa Nacional Frente a la Minería llegaron hasta la sede del Banco Mundial en la capital salvadoreña para pedirle a este organismo internacional que revise el papel que está jugando el Centro Internacional de Arreglos de Diferencias, CIADI, respecto a la demanda millonaria de la canadiense Pacific Rim. Habla el representante de Aliados Internacionales, Pedro Cabezas.
Esta carta se le entrega al Banco Mundial. Este día el Banco Mundial comienza su reunión anual y hay organizaciones de la sociedad civil, diferentes países que están en Washington reunidos para ver la política del Banco Mundial, y una de las políticas del Banco Mundial es eliminar la pobreza en los países y generar el desarrollo económico para las comunidades. Nosotros vemos una contradicción con la retórica del Banco Mundial y con las acciones que las instituciones del Banco Mundial tienen, ¿no? Resulta que el CIADI es una instancia del Banco Mundial donde muchas corporaciones están demandando a varios países alrededor del mundo que están tratando de tomar políticas públicas que beneficien al interés público, al interés nacional. Entonces, por eso estamos nosotros pidiéndole al Banco Mundial que revise el rol que esta instancia tiene respecto a los objetivos de esa organización.
La vocera de la Mesa Nacional Frente a la Minería Metálica, Vidalina Morales, también señaló el papel determinante que debería jugar el nuevo gobierno para no permitir proyectos de explotación y más demandas contra el Estado.
Nosotros esperaríamos del nuevo gobierno, como lo dijo en San Isidro Cabaña, que haga sus palabras realidad. No creemos en palabras porque las palabras al final terminan llevándoselas el viento. Creemos que debe encaminar sus palabras a quedar plasmadas en políticas, en leyes, como una ley que prohíba definitivamente la minería. Y esto el gobierno tiene pues toda la facultad de hacerlo, hacer incidencia en los diputados, en la Asamblea Legislativa, porque son ellos también y ellas las que aprueban y desaprueban las leyes.
Las concentraciones frente a la sede del Banco Mundial también se realizó paralelamente en Washington, Vancouver y en Toronto, Canadá, en donde las organizaciones han mantenido una permanente denuncia contra las empresas extractivas.
El derechista presidente de Panamá, Ricardo Martinelli, podría ser llamado a declarar en Italia. Al multimillonario empresario se le acusa de corrupción. Hugo Vera con los detalles.
Este es el Palacio de Gobierno de Panamá, el Palacio de las Garzas. ¿De qué podría salir el presidente Ricardo Martinelli el 1 de julio hacia los tribunales italianos?
La conspiración para extorsionar a la empresa Impregilio, producto de una oferta de la construcción de un hospital en Panamá, que Martinelli tenía interés que un socio cubano-americano de él, el señor que se ha vinculado pues como socio de él, el señor este, iba a construir el hospital dándole coima a Martinelli, y para ello se amenazó Impregilio para que pagara la promesa del presidente de Italia de construir el hospital en Panamá.
El hospital había sido prometido por el primer ministro italiano Silvio Berlusconi durante su visita a Panamá en el 2009. Los fiscales italianos aseguran que Martinelli amenazó, mediante el ciudadano italiano Walter Lavitola, a la empresa que participa en obras de ampliación del canal, con afectarlos con declaraciones negativas y negarles el contrato para la construcción del Metro de Panamá si no culminaba la obra que el mismo Martinelli había prometido.
Nosotros estamos viviendo las consecuencias de un ímpetu empresarial y unas costumbres empresariales que fueron trasladadas al servicio público, que han trastocado todos los niveles de controles y fiscalización.
Los movimientos sociales señalan que ven con preocupación que este tipo de corrupción manche todas las obras impulsadas por el actual gobierno.
Este gobierno ha tenido la nota concordante en que todo ha pasado por el filtro aparentemente de la corrupción. Los sobrecostos, los precios altos, toda una serie de prebendas que supuestamente se han solicitado para hacer las construcciones y las megaobras están en tela de duda.
Los mismos movimientos señalan que dudan que la justicia panameña intervenga si el 4 de mayo continúan en el poder los mismos partidos de derecha. Hugo Vera, Telesur, Ciudad de Panamá.
No, 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 no son campanas, no, no, no son de muerte, que son de vida, son todo un pueblo de compañeros, todos hermanos, cientos de miles por todo Chile.
El incendio en Valparaíso es el peor en la historia de Chile, confirmó la presidenta Michelle Bachelet. Bachelet prometió apoyo del gobierno a los miles de damnificados, informa Raúl Martínez.
13 años demoró la familia de Evelyn en levantar su hogar. El terreno fue conseguido a comienzos del 2000, cuando se estableció un campamento de los sin casa de todo Valparaíso. El incendio que afectó los cerros más pobres de esta ciudad se llevó todo.
La misma gente aquí, ¿no?, que los que no teníamos propiedades, no pudimos tomar el terreno y todo, y se supone que eso iba a gestionar escritura y todo, pero nunca se hizo nada.
Levantarse otra vez junto a su familia. Ese es el espíritu que ronda los cerros calcinados por el fuego. En el caso de Evelyn, el sacrificio siempre ha sido con los suyos, sin la ayuda de autoridades ni las empresas que lucran con los servicios básicos que en Chile están privatizados.
Llevamos años luchando por el tema del agua. Y nunca nos pusieron el agua. Imagínense, años que yo tenía el medidor ahí, medidor de luz, ¿para qué? Si no, nos dieron el pase del agua, Esval nunca puso. Esval ha ponido muchos problemas por el tema de los terrenos que no están regularizados todavía.
Historias similares llenan los cerros de Valparaíso. Este hombre vivía con su padre y su hermana. También quedaron solo con lo que llevaban el día del incendio.
Cuando llegué a Guerría, las casas ya estaban todas quemadas. Quedamos con la pura ropa puesta, ¿no?
¿No alcanzaron a secar nada?
Nada, nada, nada. No ganamos nada. Y había que tirar para arriba, ¿no? Pero no nos quedamos, hay que luchar.
Desde los cerros vecinos, a pesar de la precariedad, otros pobres también se suman para ayudar con lo que está al alcance.
Que el pobre siempre busca dónde vivir, pues sí. Y es la realidad de Chile, ¿no? Que el pobre busca dónde vivir, no elige, o sea, donde se le da, se instala.
Entre 2005 y 2009, Valparaíso tuvo cerca de 277 incendios, según un estudio académico. Así, el siniestro que afectó a una de las ciudades con más pobres de Chile podría haberse evitado. Sin embargo, las quebradas donde construye la gente mantenía al momento del siniestro pasto, vegetación seca y basura. Raúl Martínez, Telesur, Chile.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a Telesur de Venezuela, a la Asociación Latinoamericana de Educación Radiofónica, ALER, al diario La Jornada y a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Tune in at 7 p.m. for the Great Leap Forward. This is a really good interview. You really, this guy, he is.
Cut! Take two!
Tune in on the Great Leap Forward. We have a radio station. On Free Radio Santa Cruz. What's the matter with me? I'm losing something.
Well, you get the idea. Yes, it is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and that's what you're listening to, and that's what... accounts for the interesting quality of the show. However, coming up next is Bathrob Spears' Broadsides. a traditional Thursday evening show. We're going to be having some reviews of street life in the last week. We had a protest isn't quite the word, actually a more information gathering session out near the pedestrian footbridge, which parallels the Highway 1 bridge that comes down to through Santa Cruz as sort of Highway 1 rolls north. We'll be talking more about that. Lots of snips and snatches, so stay tuned, and I'll be right back.
The question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? To our imperialism? Who owns the land? Will someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be. Who owns the land?
And the answer is the community is entitled to the land, and ownership is one of these crazy things that came in later. So you are tuned to 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. My name is Robert Norris, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides for April, not March, as I may have said on a previous show, skipping back a month, 17th, 2014. I'm going to begin today with some interviews from Farmer's Market of a week ago. In Santa Cruz Farmers Market, the Farmers Market happens every Wednesday downtown, and it's a kind of a colorful gathering, though it's become significantly commercialized. It's driven away the drum circle. It tends to drive away musicians who are independently trying to play, or street jewelers who try to set up near the Farmers Market on the sidewalk. It's a kind of a nasty combine kind of situation, if you... I think that's the phrase used in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, if I remember correctly. Maybe I don't. The novel that talked about how the sort of the establishment, the corporations, the bosses are sort of taken over and squeezing the little folks out. And I hate to see that at the farmer's market. Although I guess Food Not Bombs does show up there. Abby and Keith, who are spearheading Food Not Bombs along with a lot of other folks and expanding it every Saturday and Sunday. There's a meal, as the regular listeners probably know all too well, 4 o'clock at the main post office, or right near it, on the sidewalk. Anyway, let's see. I'm just going to dive into these interviews and hope my brain sort of loosens up a bit. If you want to help loosen me up, you can call in 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. I may be playing some tape from the Board of Supervisors, sometimes known as the Stupid Vipers, which met they meet every Tuesday, unlike the City Council, which meets every other Tuesday in terms of regular sessions. They meet every Tuesday, and they're on the fifth floor of the county building, for all of you who don't know. They talked about needle exchange, which is under attack from groups like Take Back Santa Cruz, and I've talked about it in my frustrations with not just those who are attacking it, but those who aren't defending it, or actually moving from defense to aggressive advance, looking for some real solutions to drug war casualties that, you know, as are all over the place. So let's begin, though, with some interviews with, I think this is the Farmer's Market of April 9th, but I'm not sure, because I ran into Meriwether Mike, also known as Musical Mike, a colorful street fellow who plays bad music but has a great happy attitude. And maybe it's not that bad. Maybe it's gotten better because he's apparently been commissioned to or allowed to play either at the Vets Hall and or the Loudon Nelson Center. And he talks a bit about that. I began this interview, I think it was a week ago, and then it got sidelined. Maybe it was on Sunday when I also have a show Sunday mornings from 9:30 to 1, and you're invited to, of course, listen into that. Again, you're invited to call in 831-427-3772 if you have any thoughts about what you're hearing or thoughts about what you think you should be hearing or breaking news in the community or who knows what. I'm initially tolerant, though I can get cranky quickly, as regular listeners know, but I'll try to... I don't know, rein in my crankiness today and see what I can do. So don't be afraid to call in, 427-3772, and speak not just to me, but to others who are, for sure, at least a few, listening to this show.
Mike, who's on the outskirts of the farmer's market. Mike, Wednesday is a special day for you because, in fact, today, a very special day because you're able to play both at the Vets Hall and for the senior luncheon.
Right. Well, it's kind of a special occasion to have that second opportunity with the Vets, that not only do they weekly have their spot at the Vets Hall, and today, yeah, they went to the senior lunch.
Did you play in the basement, upstairs? Where did you play in the building or the Vets Hall?
We were in the basement.
Did they search you up and down and demand ID when you walked in?
No, it was all pretty casual. Just, you know, pretty much just folks coming and going, and they had some groups offering benefits in the front room there. I forgot the name of it, but anyway, the auditorium. Yeah, they have a weekly thing where they do outreach.
Church that feeds in the basement on Wednesdays or sometime.
I haven't seen any meals, but I don't go. This is the first time I've gone. The second time since they opened. So
I've also heard that they're rather militant and militaristic on Wednesday because of all the people they have. They have signs, you know, no public bathrooms. They, you know, you're subject to search and all this sort of stuff.
Well, I did get run out of the bathroom once the first time I went. Because they didn't think I was legitimate.
You know, who would, the way you look, Mr. Barefoot Tennis Shoe Guy?
But, you know, it all works out. We just gotta roll with the punches, like they say.
Anything happening downtown you've noticed? I know at least you're down here a little bit. Before, we thought you'd been driven away completely by the many ticketed police and hosts.
Just a lot of great sidewalk sales. I think, you know, as long as the shoppers are happy. Like the old saying, when mama's happy, everybody's happy. When the shoppers are happy, we're all happy.
The shoppers aren't really mama. They're more like the traveling sales people at the door. Actually, they're not. But yeah, well, that's interesting. So you do come down here pretty regularly now?
I'm picking it up a little bit. It's just, I haven't really got a schedule yet, but I'm starting to sort of swing back from, like you said, I kind of pulled back for a while.
And now you're, did you ever get a guitar again? I know you heard about a week or two ago it was taken from you.
Right, yeah, I did have one of those, unwanted shares. Past paying it forward without, you know, the unintentional paying it forward, you know. But we're over it. Hey, how's it going?
The Sanctuary Camp, Santa Forest.
All right, I'm at the Food Not Bombs table. I'm talking with...
Yeah, so this is Keith McHenry, and I was just coming out of the Palomar, and there was a guy doing steel guitar. Amazing. Unbelievably amazing artist. And he's just sitting there doing it with his guitar case open, and it was, I couldn't believe how good this dude was. And the security guard comes out of the place and goes, "You can't be here. Like, you got to be 14 feet from blah, blah, blah. Get out of here." And the poor guy's was stressed, and he's like, "Well, where do you want me to go?" You know, and so I'm telling him, "Just go right there. Tell this guy to screw up."
And musicians are really under serious bureaucratic attack downtown. It's happening a lot. Although, you know, it really, it's kind of random. That makes it, in a way, even more spooky because you don't know what to expect when. We actually played some of this before. I thought that there was a longer interview with a musical mic, but there isn't. Instead, however, I think I'm going to play an interview with someone who has been previously silent for, actually, literally silent, for the last 6 months or more. This is Freedom Bridges, who... an activist with Occupy Santa Cruz, camps outside, really an eerie, happy spirit person. And she's been doing a lot of traveling up and down the coast, comes in and out of Santa Cruz, comes to the occasional Huff meeting, and this is where we found her. Right after the Huff meeting, she agreed to an interview, and actually this may be her first interview when she has abandoned her word fast, meaning not speaking for a long period of time. And let's hear what she had to say.
So here we are. It's April 2nd, I believe, the day after the foolish April 1st. Yeah? It is April. And outside, it's not showering, but half the time it's cloudy, half the time it's sunny. It is around 11:15 or 20. We're at the mini Huff meeting, or the pre-Huff meeting, talking with...
Freedom!
And Freedom, this is really your first verbal interview in about, what, 9 months?
Sure.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you have been communicating through signs, through expressions, through writing, a very difficult thing to do in a verbal society. How does it feel now to be speaking? And do you want to have any thoughts about that particular experience you've had for the last 9 months?
It's interesting speaking after taking some time to listen for quite a while and observe. Also, communicate non-verbally. It still feels like speaking to some degree. It's just a lot slower, and you have to put a lot more intention into what you would like to say. So being deliberate with a word is a great lesson that we've learned recently. Something we've noticed during our time of observation or silence or whatever you'd like to call it is a lot of gender-biased language, as well as people, mostly white male with privilege, not to categorize or assume anything, but from observation, a lot of white males with privilege were taking much of the space in the conversation, leaving little to no space for any female-bodied people or any other identifying folks that don't identify as white male or white cis male, whatever it is. So that was quite interesting to actually observe that to that degree and see how prevalent it is in our society, as well as the gender bias language, like people assuming your gender preferred pronoun is she because of your body type, and our gender preferred pronoun is they. So that's something that's important to us. We like to share with people now that we're speaking, and just in general, when we weren't speaking, we'd go through the motions of trying to communicate that non-verbally, which took a lot of time and effort. And it helps to figure out who your true friends are and who is sober, even, because a lot of people, if they're on any alcohol or anything, their eyes tend to shift a little bit during conversations. If you're non-verbally communicating, they just won't understand because they can't focus as well, depending on the degree of, you know, severity of intoxication as well. But we pray for everyone struggling with addictions and pray for the healing of everyone in the earth, especially.
Did you find, how did you find you were treated by authorities or the Santa Cruz community or other communities you went through? Was there a pattern as to how people respond? You already mentioned one of the patterns in terms of the gender language or identification language, body type identification. Any other aspects that stood out for you?
with quote-unquote authority figures, like some police. It was kind of comical because in certain situations, some police would just go to their superiors and ask, what do we do? And then come back to me and either do nothing or take me straight to jail. And that was kind of, there was an experience in a city which we don't want to give too much information about, just in case they somehow find this particular internet radio or radio interview, whatever it turns out to be. But one of the towns never got our name and ended up calling us Jane Doe in the jail. And
what were you charged with, if you wish to say?
Nothing. They kept asking me why I was in there, and I wasn't exactly sure why I was arrested, except for not speaking to them, or writing or complying in any way, basically.
Now, was that your response to police generally? Did you attempt to communicate, or did you just simply choose to say nothing and not respond to them?
Generally, just smile at everyone, regardless of their whatever they believe their stature is, because everyone is equal, and just smiled at everyone. Sometimes if we felt, not like if we felt coerced, but if we felt genuine care or curiosity or something, then we would try to nonverbally communicate with people. But with the police, it was generally just coercion and threats, so we weren't as interested in trying to nonverbally communicate, nor were they very interested in trying to nonverbally communicate. They never once got a interpreter or anything, even though many of our friends said, hey, that's the deaf person, that person is deaf. Even they thought, they generally thought, you know, genuinely thought that we were deaf. But
did they just start talking louder to you?
They just threw the cuffs on and threw me in the back of a car.
How many times were you arrested and as a consequence of this nonverbal situation?
Once, and it was a fairly violent arrest. It was all videotaped, and we were thrown into a jail cell and stripped naked and left there for at least 12 to 24 hours on suicide watch.
Bologna sandwiches, perhaps?
Oh, we didn't eat anything because it was all poison. Whatever was the food was, it was horrific. But yeah, it was kind of a violent arrest. Not on our part, obviously. We were very nonviolent.
How many of you were arrested?
Just us, and Shiny was taken as well.
But the dog was returned?
After 3 days, and we had to go through some things.
Did you ransom the pooch?
No. Gratefully, no.
And what about in Santa Cruz? How have the Santa Cruz police related to your silent communication?
I haven't had too many experiences with the Santa Cruz police all that recently, except for couple tickets under the bridge, or at least one ticket, and in that case we just wrote down our name because we really didn't want to go through the trouble of what happened at the previous police encounter.
But that wasn't an encounter in Santa Cruz.
It was not, but it was still a lot of post-traumatic stress was still residing in us at that time, so we didn't wish to be involved in anything reoccurring.
Of course, when Freedom uses the we, I assume she's talking about herself. I would normally say I. She says we, preferring apparently that pronoun, if I'm not mistaken. But in the studio with me, I have Michael O'Grady, or Dr. O'Grady, as some have referred to him. Actually, no one has referred to him as Dr. O'Grady, except himself. But we're going to be bringing his bona fides at some point in the future, possibly flown in from Ireland, where you had your education. Yeah, belly up to the mic there, Mike.
Okay, I was just trying to make the point that Freedom usually travels with one or two friends, so she probably was referring to her immediate friends.
I don't think so, because she's talked about using the pronoun, and she didn't mention being jailed with anyone else who was named other than her dog, Shiny. But perhaps, you know, I could be wrong about that.
Well, she said we were put in a cell.
Yes, but my point to you is that we is what she means by I. She's using a different pronoun.
Oh, okay.
She doesn't believe in gender pronouns, and apparently she doesn't believe in a singular pronoun. I may be wrong about this.
Yeah.
And maybe later corrected. I don't know if you were in the studio when she began that. Or maybe you were asleep, nodding off in the corner. That could have been, too. I don't know.
Was she here in the studio at one time?
No. You might have been nodding off in the corner. In fact, maybe you're nodding off now as we...
Yeah.
she's been in the studio, yeah, but she hasn't been here for a while. So.
Okay.
And this interview was not in the studio.
No.
Let's hear some more here.
Yeah.
Merchants, because I know you also sort of had sworn off money. In fact, you still may not be operating on the money economy, right?
Correct.
And you gave up money about what point?
It was actually after the occupation was raided, and then some folks went into a foreclosed house after that who didn't have anywhere to go, and we're holding down a foreclosed home until the end of May. So at the very end of May and about...
2012?
Was it 2012 or 2011?
2011 was when the occupation was. 2012 was...
Okay.
And the fall of the occupation.
In the spring. Yeah, so it was 2012 in May. The first day of June, actually, was the day we changed our name and stopped using money.
So you've almost done this 2 years.
Yeah, I guess so. Almost 2 years.
So, good morning, Michael. Anything you want to add about what your experience has been, or you know how it feels now to be talking? Does it feel better? Does it feel different? Does it feel worse? How does it feel?
I feel very grateful to be speaking now and to help cultivate mindfulness in friends and to teach as well as learn, because I feel like we were learning a lot in that last year or almost year of silence, but it's nice to share things certain times too, which is what got us talking in the first place, walking by that foreclosed home and having memories of friends there. And one of our friends we strongly feel was assassinated.
Anthony,
yeah, Occupy Chop, a.k.a. It was a really beautiful soul, but one night it was just too overwhelming to continue to hold in so many things, so a lot of memories just came up, and I'm grateful to be able to share things now.
Well, thank you, and we've been talking with...
Freedom, thank you very much.
Thank you, Freedom. About 10 to 3 on April 2nd, I'm coming through the New Leaf Market. No guard at the back door. That's kind of reassuring, being there. Can't leave without a receipt policy that is posted. All customers exiting through the back door must be prepared to show a receipt for any item produced. Thank you for your purchase. Thank you for your cooperation.
And, I've noticed a gradual... You want to call it militarization or a police presence in New Leaf Market. I've had my differences with New Leaf a decade ago when they supported the essential seizure of the sidewalk for commercial purposes in front of New Leaf, which used to be an open space where people could gather and stand about, and I tabled. And in order to eliminate the youth culture that was hanging there, they privatized the whole thing with a fence. I was actually... arrested and won a lawsuit for false arrest when I was arrested for tabling against that fence in 2002. But New Leaf was a supporter of it. And for a while, I was encouraging a boycott of New Leaf and the two kiosk businesses, which at that time were Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe there. I do patronize New Leaf, though. I go in there and buy stuff, overpriced stuff, of course. And I've noticed, for example, about a year and a half ago, there was suddenly a security guard in the store, kind of, you know, all dressed up in uniform and, you know, I don't know, ready to interrogate you. Although, you know, it wasn't that he was particularly mean or nasty as an individual, but the presence of that kind of police force makes me nervous. And, of course, you know, oh, they're shoplifters. And so, yeah, that's, I suppose. I also noticed, and although I haven't heard of cars being towed from the New Leaf parking lot, there have been signs which seem to have appeared in the last few years threatening harsher punishment for those who park there more than an hour and either who are not customers or park longer. And that's concerned me, too, particularly since the parking lot doesn't seem to be full. It's a popular parking lot, but I don't recall any occasion when I've had to go somewhere else. There's always been a space, but maybe I've just been lucky or gone in at fortuitous times. You never can tell, you know, some particular times. Then about 3 or 4 weeks ago, they also had their policy. They were not letting people use their bathroom without getting some kind of a token or a key. And I think first it was a key, and then it was a token, or maybe it's always been a token. And then they started interrogating you whether you'd purchase something in the store before giving you a token. And then most recently, when I went through the line and bought something there, the guy handed me a receipt, and I said, trash it. He says, you better keep it. We're requiring receipts if you want to go out the back entrance. We have a guard back there. So it's beginning to seem a little bit more like a small concentration camp, prison institution sort of thing. You know, I mean, not obviously, you know, it's not that in its entirety, but there are sort of telltale hallmarks of the police state that are appearing here. I call it the fascistization of the downtown area. One might say, you know, has there been that much of a huge increase in shoplifting over a decade or two ago to justify this kind of behavior by New Leaf managers? I haven't interviewed them. I don't know. Maybe someone else can, or maybe I will in the future. It's possible. Has there been an increase in the number of security problems? Or is this just the public safety hysteria that is becoming quite manifest in the needle mania and the attacks on homeless people in terms of both legalized and vigilante, you know, and the whole mesh of ridiculous, now strained to the breaking point downtown ordinances that criminalize being on 95% of the sidewalk, or at least sitting down, or setting up a table, or trying to perform for donation with a display device, or vend, that should be troubling to those of us who want to see some kind of spirit retained in downtown Santa Cruz. And so that was, something I've noticed, and perhaps you too. You have too, or maybe you haven't. Maybe it's you feel safer now that those security guards are not just in New Leaf, but they're first alarm security guards stalking around town on the avenue and over at City Hall and at the library, and there's Panther Protective Services, or there used to be. I'm not sure if they're still there, in the Trader Joe's area. And increasing reports of Trader Joe's acting harshly with people they are either accused of being shoplifters or don't like the look of. Or I had an interview with a guy who plugged in his phone next to the bathroom area, which now you used to be able to walk into the bathroom. Now you have to get a Trader Joe's employee to let you in with the secret combination. And it's getting pretty grotesque and pretty oppressive. Although, you know, the employees are friendly enough. I'm not accusing them of being unfriendly. I'm glad they are, as you know, I know a lot of them seem to, at least by sight. So this guy was plugging in his phone to make a phone call or to charge it or something, and he was told by some employee, you can't do that, and you can't do that near the women's bathroom. He said, okay. And I thought he meant he moved over to the men's area bathroom, next to the men's bathroom. And the employee got irate with him and demanded he leave, although it sounded like a communication problem. That he wasn't telling him. The guy was understanding he wasn't supposed to do it at all. My goodness, stealing our electricity, heavens to Betsy. He wasn't asked if he was a customer or not. Anyway, I may have that interview coming up today, I may not. Have you had problems at Trader Joe's or New Leaf? Do you have any thoughts about this increased policification of the downtown? Perhaps we're getting a call even now. Hi there, you're on Free Radio with Mike and Robert. Hello?
Hello?
Hey, I can hear you. This is the infamous James Costner, if I'm mistaken.
Yes, it is. Hopefully I'm not infamous, though.
Probably not. You've been away for a while. People who are old-timers, remember at one time you were a Free Radio broadcaster, no?
I was a Free Radio broadcaster at one point. It seemed like many lifetimes ago.
And you're calling from...
How are you tonight, Mr. Norris?
I'm good. Are you calling from Oakland, are you?
I'm calling from San Leandro, California. I'm calling from my car. I'm driving to Fremont.
Oh, so you're calling illegally. Should we inform the police of your behavior, Mr. Hoffman?
I'm sure they listen to you, and I'm sure they listen to others. So I don't think there's any information that's new or needed for them to listen in.
Well, James, I know that I used to call you Jim. For those who don't remember, Jim Costner, now James Costner.
Thank you for remembering that. I like James, and Jim is a horrible name for me, so thank you.
Well, I kind of like it, but, you know, every man and woman...
Your voice is really, faint.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I don't feel faint, and I probably don't sound faint here in the studio.
I can barely hear you at all.
How about now?
That's better.
Okay, well, let's try that. Although it looks on my board, it doesn't look that way. So...
You're still really faint.
How about now?
A little better. Better?
Okay. Well, I'll do what I can. I'm going to be moving away from the mic every now and then to make a note or two for our FBI friends about your behaviors, James.
Well, you know, I hope you get paid well for that job.
Never enough. We're always greedy for more, as you know.
That's what the system seems to be about.
So for those who don't know, or don't remember, you were an activist who was concerned a lot with a number of issues. You formed, a Revolutionary Coalition in 1996 here. You have been jailed for posting flyers urging freedom for Mumia Abu-Jamal. And there have been other points of concern that you've had.
I remember you and I going to jail together a handful of times, from the sleeping ban, for the sitting ban, for the war in Yugoslavia. You and I, we've been cuffed together.
Indeed, a cuff together, you and I. What can I say? I remember, there was actually a big sleep out in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz that the Industrial Workers of the World did in 1994, and then nobody got arrested. There were 70 or 80 people lying around out there. But the next night, there were just eight of us, you and I and a bunch of others, and they hauled us all in. I remember that.
And they took us away. Yes, they did. And thankfully, we got out, unlike some of our leaders in this country that have not been released.
Yeah. Well, you've been working on things ranging from a documentary on police abuse throughout California to some other matters. You've been teaching recently. You want to bring us up to date on what you've been up to and what your latest project is, because I know you were concerned about passing information on about that.
Well, first of all, I appreciate you letting me be on the air, and where do I begin? I guess I can just quickly say that, as you mentioned, I was in Santa Cruz for, I think, 10-plus years and did a lot of human rights work with a lot of people, including yourself and Free Radio folks and students from UCSC and students from Cabrillo and various, leaders in the community and various people, active people in the community. We did a lot of work and tried to promote the human rights agenda in a lot of fronts. Since then, I moved to Oakland. I spent about 10 years in Oakland. I went back to school. I earned an AA degree from Merritt College. I earned a BS degree from Cal State East Bay. I earned a master's degree from Cal State East Bay. I went on to teach for 7 years, 6 years at East Bay, and 6 years at Patton University. So I taught world history and California history and American history, political science, lots of English courses and general studies. Recently, I have been involved in police brutality issues, still keeping up with political prisoners, though not as deep as I used to, although I've re-energized that. And now I'm part of a campaign working with various folks on developing a collective leadership, hopefully nationwide. We're not as far along as we want to be or need to be, but we're getting there. We had a conference call last Monday. I think about four states and maybe 10 cities or so were represented, or at least represented by individuals who were involved in their communities and in various rights, immigrants' rights, police brutality, anti-police brutality work, anti-violence work, anti-racist work. And so we have a campaign, and we have very clear demands that we're asking that on the political prisoners front, we're demanding of the U.S. government that Leonard Peltier, Mumia Abu-Jamal, Ramzi Muniz, the Move 9, Rocky Boyce all be freed. Those cases are very blatant where the preponderance of evidence completely shows their innocence and how they were railroaded for basically being leaders basically being political organizers and outspoken individuals in their communities and for their communities. So we demand that they be released. We also have highlighted 12 police brutality cases, cases like Oscar Grant and Johannes Mezzali, cases like Ernest Duenas and John Moody, who killed them, cases like Alan Bluford and Bartolomeo Hernandez down in Anaheim, who was killed. Recently, the James Boyd was a homeless man that was killed out in Albuquerque, New Mexico. That kind of reminds me of John Dine in Santa Cruz, who was killed in 96, who was a homeless man and was not engaged in any kind of behavior that was of detriment to society or was engaged in any kind of violent crime or any kind of crime that was problem for people, but Officer Connicary got away with, you know, killing him. And that's the police seem to be, police brutality, police murder seem to be on a great rise. So we've highlighted 12 cases with the officers. We're demanding that the officers be fired, be, you know, stripped of their badge and their gun, for obviously they're a threat to society, a threat to the community that they work in. They're supposed to be protecting, but they've actually, you know, they actually always killing. Mm-hmm. And we're also asking or demanding that they be brought up on first degree murder charges. I also, with that campaign, I have agreed and vowed and elected to go on a hunger strike, a fast, and I know this is going to be extreme, but for people who know me, that hopefully they will understand and not just judge. I'm going to go ahead and fast all the way, and let me clarify what that means. On May 13th, and I chose May 13th to honor the MOVE organization and John Africa and the MOVE Freedom Fighters, blacks, Latinos, and whites, who sacrificially fought for their communities and have done all kinds of amazing work. And as probably people in Santa Cruz, some of you listeners might not know, they were bombed by the Philadelphia police and on May 13th, 1985, and they were 11 of them were killed, including 5 children and 6 adults. And they actually let 61 houses burn to the ground in Philadelphia. Even though that fire truck standing around, they could have put the fires out. They always did it on purpose, and they to set an example that you're not supposed to freedom fight in America. You have to be in line with the racist agenda, and you have to be in line with the imperial colonial agenda, or you have to be silent. You don't get to be outspoken without consequences, and that's the reality. So anyways, I'm going to begin a hunger strike on May 13th. We're building a nationwide campaign to force the United States government to the negotiating table around these issues, and I will take it all the way. So 3 months from now, I'll either be a dead man or we'll be at the negotiating table. And there's a lot of people trying to talk me out of it, but I really believe I'm following my conscience. I really believe I'm following my understanding of my spirituality, my religious belief system, and my political belief system. And I am gaining support privately. And publicly, unfortunately, not a lot yet, but I hope that changes. But privately, there's a lot of support that's gaining and galvanizing. Also, there's a lot of critique. So anytime you do something real, there's going to be people who, you know, will help you, and there'll be people who, you know, denounce you. I mean, that's the reality of the United States. So I hope that didn't take too long, and that's what's going on in a nutshell.
So, James, in the studio with me is Dr. Michael O'Grady, who's a...
hello, Michael.
Hey, hello, James.
And he's a traveling guy from Ireland, and he's been practicing, he tells me, in Canada and elsewhere. And he's been on my show last, 3 or 4 weeks. And he's got a question for you.
Sure. Hello, Michael.
Yes, James. I was wondering when you said you were going to do fasting for that cause.
Oh, I can't hear you at all, Michael. I'm sorry.
Oh, you can't hear me?
I can't hear you at all. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Is that better, or can you hear me now?
No, I still can't hear you.
Try it again.
All right. How about this one?
Yeah.
How about now?
Oh, that's much better.
Much better. Okay. I was wondering when you said you were going to fast for the cause in Albuquerque or wherever that was, how long are you going to fast for? Do you have a certain amount of days that you have in mind?
I'm going to fast until the government meets the demands or until I die.
Oh, I see. Okay. That's pretty serious commitment. Okay. Well, anyway, thank you for all your fighting for all those causes you were just talking about. Which is, and good luck with the fast. Hopefully it'll turn out good for everyone.
So
I hope so too. Michael.
So James, are you intending to do this alone, or are others going to be doing it with you?
I'm not asking anybody to fast with me. I personally don't think being hungry is a good idea, and I don't think fasting is really the best of ideas either. I just think that we're at a very crucial time, a very critical time, and the police state is growing, and the murder rates are growing, and the violence is growing, and the ignorance is growing, and the selfishness is growing, and it's like a disease. And if people don't, if some people don't begin to take a much more serious stand against it, we're all going to be the much, we're not all of us, some of us are living Disneyland lifestyles, but a lot of us are going to be in a very bad situation, and a lot of it's are, a lot of people are already in very bad situations, right? And so the campaign really is the hope to turn the tide. Me fasting to death is not going to do, is not going to do a lot. A campaign can do a lot, and the point of fasting is to develop the spiritual and moral foundation, and the, and to hopefully draw the consciousness and the awareness of people throughout the nation who may, because of being sympathetic and because of the seriousness of my stance, hopefully that will open their eyes. Hopefully that will move them further to take more of a, take more notice, and hopefully to, you know, we pledge or we urge, we plead with people to take up the demands. Obviously there's a lot more going on than just these issues, but we got to make headway in some issues so we can actually begin to turn this climate around.
So, James, these, can you hear me now?
Yes.
So the demands, since you've got three demands, you're asking for the release of a specific group of people. When I read your note about this on Facebook, I heard you say all political prisoners, which means you're surely a goner unless there's a revolution in the United States.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think you're absolutely right. And so we're raising the issues of all political prisoners, and we're highlighting five clear cut cases of political prisoners that I mentioned to you, and the demand is to let them go, and there's some of the cases that are real super, super crystal clear in terms of the evidence.
Now, is there a website online where people can read more about these specific cases in case they don't know?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you asked. Campaignforjustice.com. And four is the number four. So campaignforjustice.com.
Okay, campaignforjustice.com.
Yeah, and we have links on it, and articles, and videos, and movies, and documentaries, and we strongly encourage people. If they don't, we don't want people to take our word for it just because we say so. We want people to investigate, look at the facts on both sides, look at both sides of the issues, and then look at the facts carefully and use analytical thought and logical thought and rational thought to draw your own conclusion.
What about in the you live in the San Leandro area now, or?
Yes, in San Leandro.
Are there any political prisoners in San Leandro that might be benefited by you're focusing on in your fast?
I don't know of any political prisoners in San Leandro.
How about in the Bay Area?
I'm sure there are political prisoners in the Bay Area. I am not educated or informed at the moment on political prisoners who are in the Bay Area. Maybe perhaps San Quentin. There's people who have been doing political prisoner work way longer than I have, and they would be in a much better position to answer that question, or, of course, more research. Off the top of my head, I don't know, so I'm just going to be direct and honest.
No, yeah, sure. Have you spoken to those groups in terms of how do people relate to this, this plan of yours? I know, you've been a leader here in Santa Cruz, at least during the 90s, and then you were famous for the Columbus statue demolition, which some regarded as sort of a quixotic venture. You'd regard it as a matter of principle. And you really you spent some time in jail, and you had spent a lot of years engaging in restitution for it.
I still owe $30,000 or $40,000 for that principle against racism and against Columbus and against genocide. I think that's a symbol of genocide, a symbol of racism, a symbol of conquest, a symbol of race, and so on principle, and a symbol of anti-Indianism and anti-Africanism and anti-people of this land. So I, as a principal, yeah, that got taken down for a couple of years. They put it back up badly. I was given a 10-month sentence. I spent the better part of 7 months in San Jose County Jail, and then mostly in Elmwood, so-called correctional facility. I paid $30,000 over since that time period for this symbol, for this act of resistance, and I still owe $40,000. And I can appreciate the criticism, but I'm not. This conversation is not about people agreeing with you know, tearing down Clemens.
No, I wasn't specifically criticizing you. I've done enough of that already on that particular issue.
Yeah.
You know, my concern, okay. I'm noticing, you know, I'm trying to see how you this time you told me when we spoke earlier, this isn't a lone wolf action like the sledgehammering of the San Jose Columbus statue.
No, I would say it's fundamentally different, and time will tell. I mean, I'm working with Alex Salazar, who's a former police officer, which I actually, you know, that was a challenge at the beginning, but I come to find out he's a very good brother and a very good human being and very outspoken against police brutality issues. They are outspoken against racism. They are outspoken for human rights and does a lot of good organizing and a lot of good work. And so I'm working with him closely. We're involved in the same campaign. There's a very good sister in Chicago that was with us on the conversation call on Monday night. There's a very good brother out in Dene, out in Arizona, part of the Dene, who also did work for in the past, and he's working with us. There's a brother named Greg Greer, who was actually the third person in line with Dr. Martin Luther King in terms of founding of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. He was on the call with us, and he's in line with this campaign. There's Jan B. Tucker, who's a very
Let me interrupt you. Let me interrupt you, James, because, I mean, these are names that I'm unfamiliar with. Who knows? They may become famous in the future. Maybe they already are famous, and maybe are, you know, I don't know how relevant it is to us right here. But did you make this decision to fast to the death, as you put it, or fast until you get a response from the government suddenly? How did it come about? Because I know for
not suddenly. In fact, if you remember, I don't know if you remember, but I had actually, I don't know about to death in the past, but I remember I had intended to go on a long fast for a Steve Argue, and I went on, I was actually in jail while he was in jail, just momentarily. He spent, I think, 7 months in lockdown where they tried to break his wrist and tried to stop him from writing, and we actually organized a very nice campaign in defense of him that made it clear to the officials that they shouldn't touch him again, and they didn't, and they'll tell you that. And actually, when I went to jail for the same night, when I came back from the WTO protesting, they put me in jail for, I think, a handful of days. And the first thing that one of the sergeants said is that we know something about leadership, too, and we know about you and Steve Argue. And they reminded me, we're the ones who feed you in here or not. So they were clearly afraid of us to some degree, which I think is powerful organizing. At the same time, that fast, I did not carry out. And I carried out for about 7 days, I think 7 or 8 days. And that was it. And this particular time period, I spent a lot of time studying, a lot of time thinking, a lot of time praying. I know not everybody's a believer in the Creator, a believer in God. I personally am. I don't make that a dividing line. I respect atheists. I respect their right to not believe. I'm not trying to preach to them or convert them. For myself, I believe in a higher power and believe in the Creator, believe in God. And I prayed a lot over the last month. The last thing that really allowed me to make this decision was I drove down to New Mexico by myself to support people down there who were fighting against police brutality because of James Boyd and because of another man that was just shot in the head a few weeks back. And they were involved in ongoing action, city council meeting, and also downtown at like the plaza they have. So I drove, it's about a 15-hour drive from San Leandro. I drove all the way through all the way down there and drove all the way back. And the whole time that I was driving, it's like 30 hours in the car. The whole time I was just going back and forth, you know, just kind of in prayer and kind of in own meditation and my own thought process and really, you know, thinking about, okay, so what's the positives of this? What's the negatives? And when I got back, I still didn't make a decision quite yet, although I felt was very much leaning towards it. Spent a little more time. I revisited my studies of Gandhi, which I studied a lot when I was a younger man. I read Gandhi's autobiography when I was 19. And I've been involved in the civil disobedience campaigns. 22 or 23 plus times I've been arrested for civil disobedience. So it's not something that I take lightly. I mean, I really believe in civil disobedience. I also believe in self-defense. I believe in a lot of things, but I really believe that this is a time period where if we're not careful, if people don't step up, a whole lot more people are going to get hurt. And I just can't, with my conscience can't tolerate it anymore. I can't be engaged in things that just are kind of mediocre or don't produce a lot of results. So this is that. Having said that, here's the decision that's been made.
Okay, well, we're talking with James Costner, old-time former Santa Cruz activist, then teacher, and now up in the San Leandro area. There's a call-in number here which people may want to use to, if they have any questions or comments. That call-in number is 469-3119, area code 831-469-3119. I should warn you, James, we aren't getting a lot of call-ins these days. I think the glory days of free radio may be behind us. It's a possibility. But
that's tragic. Why is that?
I don't know whether it's our aging equipment, the aging broadcasters, technical.
Or is it the general climate of selfishness that seems to be permeating throughout this country of America?
Well, it's also, you know, there are podcasts and there are all kinds of alternate means of communication. The people don't, you know, they don't have to use the radio so much anymore, and I presume a lot don't. Also, our collective has gotten a lot smaller because we were off the air for about a half a year. At least we were on the stream, but we were off the air, and now we're back on, and we're still plugging
away.
You were
off the air for how long?
Well, I've been doing my show regularly, but we weren't broadcasting, we were streaming, you know, for about half a year.
Okay.
Internal differences produced that particular.
How is streaming, by the way, from your point of view?
How is what?
How is streaming from your point of view?
Well, streaming, you know, I mean, I'm actually glad that we stream, not so much because people in Germany listen to us, and a few do, actually, or at least I know one.
Wow.
I mean,
you could have a much wider audience, much broader.
Yeah, I mean, there are people in different, you know, places in the world who do. But more, for me, streaming is the way I can capture this show and archive it, although I suppose it could be done without streaming. So
uh-huh.
if for those who are listening, and I hope that's millions, but probably it's about a dozen, I would
well,
say...
Well, hey, that's better than dead.
I don't know how much better it is, but...
Johnny said the truth is the truth whether you're one or a million.
No, that's true. That is true. But, you know, we are archived at huffsantacruz.org. So, James, if you want to hear this show or anyone else does, just go to huffsantacruz.org and then look for the name of the show, and you can click on the shows and, you know, hear the show again. I mean, if once isn't bad enough for you, you can hear it a second time. Or good enough for you, for that matter. So I'm going to give you a chance to sum up, James, because I've got it roll into the next, you know. I do a lot of focus on the voices of people who are unheard here in this community, as you know. And I got to get back to it because I'm getting way behind in my tapes. I still
okay.
use tapes at this end.
Well, I wanted to thank you, Mr. Norris, or Robert Norris, or Uncle Robert Norris, or Bathrobes.
Hey, you is fine. Your Majesty, if you wish. Whatever you'd like there, James.
For... letting me have some voice today, and to whoever is listening, please go to campaignforjustice.com, and please look at the information that we provide. We also provide a lot of links connected to a lot of other organizations. So if you're interested, you can get a wealth of information, and we appreciate your support in any way. And the last thing I'd like to say is that the days of Santa Cruz are a fond memory for me. We did a lot of work and a lot of exciting things together. And so I'm thankful to all those who we used to work with, who I used to work with, and I wish you all well, and I hope that you're keeping up the torch for human rights.
We'll do what we can, you know, keep us advised about you as you fade away into the skin and bone section of the population.
Well, I would be joining much of the world, so thank you very much, and take good care.
Hey, thanks, James. And that was James Costner, Jim Costner, as we used to know him here, who did a lot of organizing, stood up for a lot of issues, passionate activist. He was often in the forefront, you know, way in the forefront, and I was sometimes considerably lagging behind. I was a little more conservative, or, you know, wanted to see the, you know, organizational structure before we were running down the path, whooping and hollering. But, you know, it was still... very inspirational, and a good organizer, and an eloquent speaker, and a passionate heart, no question about it. James Costner, again, if you want to catch him and what he's talking about, his campaign for justice, it is at campaign 4, with a number 4, justice.com. Let's hear a little Peter, Paul, and Mary, and I'll be back.
garden. She thinks that she's alone and no one sees. But the beauty of it all, as the daisy petals fall, is the wish she's made that's whispered in the breeze. There's the wish in the breeze. Won't you take the chance and let your tears start falling? Ignore the fearful warnings of your mind. Let your heart for once do all the talking, and believe that you deserve for the sun to shine. Believe that you deserve for the sun to shine.
There's an old woman sitting in the doorway.
She greets the people, each one as they pass.
Sometimes they hover around her for wisdom.
Sometimes so she'll remind them how to laugh. They know that you'll remind them how to laugh. So won't you take the chance and let your tears start falling? Ignore the fearful warnings of your mind. Let your heart for once do all the talking, and believe that you deserve for the sun to shine. Sun to shine. Now on a hill there stands a cross above a graveyard,
and the simple word carved in it says forgive.
No war or killing anger can match the force it carries. It can heal the generations so that other ones can live. Shines brightly on the golden meadow, and suddenly you're not at all confused. Suddenly you're not confused. That's when you take the chance and let your tears start falling.
Take the chance and let your tears start
falling. And ignore the fearful warnings of your mind.
Ignore the fearful.
Let your heart for once do all the talking, and believe that you deserve for the sun to shine.
That you deserve,
you always did deserve for the sun to shine. I love you when I want the sun to shine. I love you and I want the sun to shine.
And that was Lifelines, Peter, Paul, and Mary, with other performers doing a kind of a reprise of some of their favorites. And that particular one was around here somewhere. There it is. Thank you, Michael. Take the Chance, I believe is what it was called. So, again, call-in number here is 427-3772. If you'd like to call in, I'm going to be playing through some more Street Interviews. Want to make a note, Steve, a local older homeless guy, who I think he lives in his vehicle these days, has been struggling with sleeping tickets, and Huff has been trying to help him. Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Santa Cruz has a law that makes it illegal to sleep outside or in a vehicle, even if it's legally parked, or on much private property after 11 o'clock at night. This is to give the police sort of a blank check to interrogate and drive away anyone that they or, I don't know, some irate community member or nervous community member thinks is a problem, even if the only problem is the presence of that person in the community. And there has been in recent years, because of the protests of homeless activists, Huff and other activist victories that have created an exception to the sleeping ban, which says that if you are on a waiting list of one of these sort of special organizations, the Homeless Lack of Services Center's Pauley Loft or the River Street Mini Shelter, then tickets will automatically be dismissed because, you know, I guess the implication is you can sleep if you're signed up for one of our programs so we can use you to get more money for our programs. Pretty nasty shit, actually, and pretty self-interested, non-profitory that actually doesn't profit the people it's supposed to profit, those who are supposedly being homeless people who are supposedly being helped by this kind of thing. But it at least provides an option, except that it hasn't been effectively activated. The law itself is quite clear. The law itself says, I was actually quoting it to Steve the other day, and let's see what, I think I quoted the law. It's 6.36055. A person shall not be in violation of the camping ordinance if at this time his or her citation, either the winter shelter at the Santa Cruz National Guard Armory is filled to capacity, and I think the winter armory closed on the 15th of April, a couple days ago, or that the person is currently on the waiting list for shelter service through one of the shelter programs offered by the Homeless Services Center or the River Street Shelter in Santa Cruz. I thought it actually mentioned Pauley Loft, but maybe not. And the second part of this provision is any citation issued for a violation of this chapter shall be dismissed by the city attorney in the interest of justice if at the time of the citation issuance the winter shelter was full, or, I'm abbreviating, it reads specifically, the winter shelter at the Santa Cruz National Guard Armory is filled to capacity, or the recipient of the citation demonstrates that on the date of the citation he or she was currently on the waiting list for shelter service through one of the shelter programs offered by the Homeless Services Center or the River Street Shelter in Santa Cruz. And the Homeless Lack of Services Center has been either refusing to give out evidence that you're on the waiting list, so you can't show it to a cop and say, hey, I'm on the waiting list. You know, back off, buddy. If you give me a citation, it's going to be dismissed. And they've also been using the gambit. Maybe it's not a gambit. Maybe it's just sheer inefficiency. Steve reports, Steve Conover is the fellow's name. He doesn't mind his name being mentioned. We've been quite public about it. That he's been to the Homeless Lack of Services Center repeatedly, trying to get a letter for the court that he was on the waiting list or a letter. He shouldn't have to get a letter for the court because this says tickets shall be dismissed short of court. And in fact, supposedly, according to the Homeless Legal Assistance Project's Steve Plaich, this was supposed to be done by the city attorney's office without any action from anybody on the waiting list. It would just happen. If you're on the waiting list, then and any tickets come in for you, they're automatically dismissed. Unfortunately, Plaich has not kept up with this, and I haven't kept up with it either. And, you know, I mean, we're all struggling to do different things, but it's not being done with any regularity. A, you can't get receipts indicating you're on the waiting list. B, you can't find the staff or personnel to do anything. And when you do, they tell you that they're not authorized to do this unless you make a federal case of it and that's what you have to do. You have to document it by writing into them, CCing the city council, CCing other people who are homeless activists, so that it becomes obvious that they are ignoring you. And then they suddenly, oh, no, we aren't ignoring you. We don't. This was the approach of Monica Martinez, the former director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. She may still be the director. She's moving on to this other group. What's it called? Encompass. Yeah, it's another name for the Santa Cruz Community Counseling Center and that complex of cases, which is a nonprofit for people with mentally ill designations. New Houston, another guy who headed it to Bob Campbell. We had our run-ins. We were also friends. Kind of interesting. You have a little both in this town. When you are an activist, you have to challenge the people who are the bureaucrats, and sometimes even when they're arresting you, they're admiring you. It's kind of funny. Looks like Steve may be at the end of his rat's maze for the moment, but of course his whole thing is ridiculous. No tickets should be issued in the first place, since there's no vacancies available in these places generally. And I know that you, Michael, have been actually on the, you were on the waiting list for a while, and on a Thursday you went down there and learned that if you hung out on a Thursday, they might have a place, and if you happen to be hanging out outside, you could get a place, and you did last week, yeah?
Yeah, I was lucky like that, because otherwise, I think I had my name on that list for 2 months or more, and then nobody contacted me, but I was lucky enough to get word of the information that if you're at a certain place at 1:30 on Thursdays, and if you're not too many people are there, you can be allotted a place in the loft.
You mentioned when you put your name on the waiting list, were you told come on Thursdays? And
No information was given like that at all. I don't know. It seems like it's kept secret more or less.
Well, they don't want too many people showing up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, exactly.
I don't know whether the cynical part of me says, oh, they're nervous about Take Back Santa Cruz and conservative business people in the area and right wing council members suggesting that they're trying to be too enabling to homeless people, because after all, you know, we know that homeless people could run in and shoot a cop or stab a downtown business person at any time. Of course, I think at least in the first case, that wasn't a homeless person. In the second case, it was a person that got out of a psych ward prematurely. But, you know, any excuse to essentially justify the gentrification, which is really concerned about property values, as well as there's this sort of gated mentality apprehension in significant segments of the community that motivates the attacks on needle exchange. It motivates the attacks on homeless services. It motivates the attacks on people who are assembling in public places who are homeless or young or of a racial minority or poor, for that matter, in downtown areas or in other areas like out at the beaches. People try to find alternate housing by getting in vehicles, sleeping in vehicles, and they are, of course, pursued by the police. They are harassed. They are ticketed. They are cited. Their vans are pounded on. And I guess rather than having me talk about it, we should have the people who've experienced it or claim to have experienced it talk about it. Any thoughts on any of that, Mike?
I did hear yesterday from talking to some people that, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but every Sunday there was a kind of artistic gathering at the lighthouse on the beach where people would play music and recite poetry or whatever. And the cops have banned that meeting now, even though the gathering was way less than 50. I think 50 is what I hear is the...
There's only a limit if you're going to do a parade through town.
Oh, okay.
And even then, that's the kind of thing that the authorities are trying to impose but have never consistently actually implemented.
Okay.
But there is such a law that's likely to be coming up at the next city council meeting, which we'll be hopefully talking about on Sunday, if I don't lose my voice and my patience.
Sunday? You'll be talking about that?
On Sunday. And by the way, on Sunday, for those who don't know, I'll be having by phone an interview with writer and researcher Robert Whitaker, who is a journalist and author and a seminal writer and thinker on the issues of the effectiveness of treatments for mental illness, biochemical treatments, medications. And he has been on the show before. You can actually look on the Huff website and listen to his earlier interviews. I'm going to try to post something about this tomorrow online so people can listen to his older stuff. He's spoken in Santa Cruz. He was actually brought here by the mental health establishment because he, though a controversial figure, he has, you know, raised a lot of concerns through his main documentation of and very careful discussion of the the effects of serotonin uptake inhibitors, I think they're called, and dopamine.
Dopamine.
Whatever parts of the brain or nodes reacts to that. And what the finding is that using drugs that suppress or aggravate either of these, which are the main things that these psychotropic drugs do, produces brain changes that essentially make so-called psychotic breaks more likely and result in chronic conditions that are much more enduring, much more disabling, but much more profitable for pharmaceutical industries and allows, and also the irony, of course, is that these things are, in the short run, symptoms are allayed. So people get the impression, oh, you've got to stay on your meds, you know, that sort of thing. And it's not that Whitaker is an inveterate opponent of medication, as I kind of am. I'm pretty militant about that myself. But he says you simply have to be, you have to be cautious. You have to consider the least restrictive kinds of approaches. You have to consider first, look at the non-medication approach, and then if in some cases medication is, you know, it's not something you would want to rule out entirely. Anyway, he'll be talking at 10 o'clock. He's written the books Mad in America and Anatomy of an Epidemic, and he will be coming on Free Radio at 10 o'clock on Sunday, April 20th in the morning. That's correct. Yeah, that'll be Easter Sunday, so for all you folks who are hunting for Easter eggs or out puffing it up at the Great Meadow at UCSC, where there's a big marijuana event every year, or doing something else, I think there are a couple other things happening on April 20th. Consider listening in, or if you don't listen in on the 20th, check the archive, because Whitaker is worth listening to, and I will grill the man and see if I can find out what his latest activities have been. Let's get back to some more street interviews and perhaps your phone calls. Remember, if you got a phone, why not use it? 427-3772 is a call-in number here. In the studio with me is Michael O'Grady, who's big into nutrition, and he's a naturopath.
Right.
And he's
MD as well.
He's good. He's an MD. I keep saying he says, because I have trouble believing that I would actually find a homeless traveling doctor, or a person who actually is, you know, going out among the people. Of course, it's not unknown, and presumably, assuming I'm not being conned here, which is always a question with my paranoid mind. Well, in any case, he's here to answer questions and we can bat stuff back and forth, or you can just talk, and we can then interrupt you with our questions. 427-3772.
Have some gentle music from a man we've heard before. What these instruments are, but he's going to have to tell me again. These instruments are...
These are called a hand pan. Hand pan, like a frying pan.
Are they expensive? Did you make them yourself?
Oh, no. They were invented in Switzerland. These ones here are made in St. Louis. These ones here cost $1,800. You can find them for more. You can find them for less.
I guess you don't want your instruments confiscated by the police department.
No. That would be a terrible day.
It would be a bad day.
That would be a bad, bad day.
Well, you've been sitting here in front of Logos, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 feet from a building, and only about 4 feet from the curb, which I should say gives you a especially invigorating carbon monoxide feeling.
I know.
And it is legal to be 14 feet from the building if you're also 14 feet from a kiosk, 14 feet from a bench, 14 feet from a sign, 14 feet from a bench. In other words, on the 5% of the Pacific Avenue and sidewalks that are left to be, and of course 0% in all other business districts that have any buildings nearby.
It truly is. To be, you know, I read the interview with the great Morgani, and he was talking about he needed to play with his back to the wall, facing the sidewalk and facing the people walking by.
The great Morgani is, of course, an accordion player who occasionally would show up on Pacific Avenue in a very colorful and unique costume. Each time it was different, usually in front of Del Williams Jewelers or thereabouts. And when he was cold, he would be ticketed unless he moved. He just said he would stop playing on Pacific Avenue, which for a brief time excited a flurry of concern in the community, but hasn't yet resulted in any kind of mass protest. Although I think the authorities laid low for a while with their ticketing machine, although Officer Barnett is on the prowl, so watch out.
Completely relate. For me, just acoustically speaking, these are quiet instruments, so I get a better sound under the alcoves. So I'm really hoping personally that, all things considered, they might want to play with those ordinances a little bit and maybe have some exempt zones or something like that. I don't know. Something that will work for everybody. Not just me, but obviously it's a staple of the community, like the Great Morgani, you know, if we could just make concessions. But there's one thing I should mention, since you have the microphone in my face, that I'm confused about, is that he was, that day when he stepped down, he had permission from the merchant to be in front. And when I was given a brochure and said if I didn't follow the rules of the brochure, I'd be ticketed, which I was, because I didn't follow those rules, it definitely said that if you have the merchant's permission, you're exempt from the, you know, ordinances.
You should review the pamphlet. There is no such provision that I know of in the law. And I read the pamphlet, I don't know, a week ago, and I didn't see any such provision.
With Tom on the cover?
Yeah, there are three of them that give out. One of them has Tom Schreiner, the Scribner.
I'll dig it up, because the one I was given back in November definitely said that.
And actually, it doesn't. What it says is that if you're on private property, you can do so with the permission of the owner, and that's certainly true. We have a caller. Tim, I believe, is what you're calling yourself. Tim, hello.
Oh, hi, Robert. Good to hear your voice.
You too.
I was listening to Bathrobe Spears and Broadsides on Thursday evening. It's a great show. I think I listened to it last week, too. But to get to the point, I wanted to say that I happen to have been fortunate enough to have seen Robert Whitaker when he was at the county clinic a few years ago. And I thought it was a good presentation. He talked about his book, which was new at the time, called Anatomy of an Epidemic, which has some pretty interesting statistics in it as far as who's being prescribed the drugs that you mentioned and how many. I think there's millions all across the United States. And then he talked about treatments and models of treatment, whereas in this country, if a person has a psychotic break, like you mentioned, you know, oftentimes they are, they give, you know, the old, who was it, Aerosmith, that had that song 5150? It's the California code description.
Yeah, 5150 is a 72-hour hold.
Yeah, so that's what happens if a person has, like, some sort of episode. But in other countries, what Robert Whitaker said was that they have, like, a whole team come to the person's house. It was really good, so I'm really glad you're going to have that on. And I'll, I think it'll be great on Easter or 420 day or whatever. But yeah, I just wanted to say that's great. So I'll try to catch that one. That's pretty much it.
Well, thanks, Tim, and I appreciate that. And maybe, you know, feel free to call him with any questions, because he will be answering questions on the air, hopefully, and we can take it from there.
Okay, great.
Hey, thanks, man.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. And, yeah, that'll be happening 10 o'clock. Sunday, April 20th, Robert Whitaker on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can call in and check it out. You can listen to it later. And now back to April 2nd street interviews.
I think it's the same one. It was published in October, and it was still being distributed by the kiosk in front of New Leaf. And
yeah, I definitely read it on it. Maybe I'll go grab a new copy.
Yeah, definitely take another look. I may pick up a copy when I go back that way. But no, merchants can't give you permission to be on the sidewalk, nor can they refuse you the right to be on the sidewalk, because these are public sidewalks. However, they can pressure the city council to make it difficult for you to be on the sidewalk, which is what they do.
Well, that's why these places that have put in the new rails, those rails are less than 14 feet away from the building. So what happens in effect is that whole block is off limits.
That's right.
And, you know, it makes things quite difficult when you have a number of buskers in Santa Cruz, which we do.
Difficult for you, but not for those who don't want you around.
Yeah, but who could that be and why?
That's a good question. Well, they don't mind people who are
commercially viable, mellow, play $1,800 instruments. But, you know, your ragtag banjo player, possibly a person of color, you never can tell.
Well, coming however, in, I would wish to clarify that that may be true. However, I was also ticketed for doing exactly what I'm doing right now. I just was too close to the building. So I'm not exempt from that either, even though I am playing these nice instruments.
No, you're not. But they would. They are. The reason that they don't entirely ban it is they realize, well, first of all, there is a tradition of musical artistry and a desire for this kind of music in Santa Cruz, and an outrage that it's being gradually destroyed or crushed, but also because I think it has a certain commercial value. You have more, you have a commercial value. You're sitting on a, you know, nice looking rug, perhaps an illegal display device in a way, but we won't get into that.
That's true. That's true. I am exceeding whatever, I think, parameter they ask. But the rug, you know, I got in Morocco, and I need to sit on the ground in order to do what I'm doing. And
Having a non-freestanding display device is now illegal. So a blanket, a rug, if you are displaying your jewelry on it or displaying anything. And a display device doesn't actually have to have anything on it. It just has to be capable of having tangible things, according to the actual wording of this ridiculous ordinance, which was cooked up about a decade ago. Again, as part of the anti-homeless laws in Santa Cruz, designed to cleanse the downtown area.
I'd much rather sit on a rug than on the cement.
I'm afraid
it's simple.
You need a freestanding device. Which
yeah. Well, they have those too, but I need a sponsor.
No, I know CSO Barnett and the other officer were here a moment ago.
Yes.
Did not attempt to ask you to move, and I think that was because you're an upscale performer. I mean, you're not a man who's performing, for example, for survival. Well, maybe you are. And you are.
But I do different things. I mean, I play guitar in a band, and I do different things musically, but musically I am surviving.
You don't look like a man who's performing necessarily for survival. Let's put it that way. So if you don't alarm the population with the reminder that for some of us the end is near, then, you know, they can leave you alone. Even if you're sitting on a device which is a, because you have something sitting on its capable of displaying objects. It's
a lapis ring. Local artists made that little lapis ring.
Local artists. Why don't you get yourself a shop, sir?
Yeah. I don't think he had a license, but boy, was his work fantastic, and he was a sure nice guy. And you're just really well-priced stuff.
Well, I notice you have an interesting looking, it looks like a CD or DVD there, You Are Loved.
You Are Loved.
Which is
that CD. I'm selling CDs for donations. I guess it's not selling if you have
to donate, or you can sell it.
I worded that kind of funny, but you know what I'm doing. But if people who feel generous in their donation can get the You Are Loved
CD. You can also put a price on them. That is legal because it is your own artwork. Okay. It is your own musical creation. But you should do what you feel best in that regard. Also, I'd like to point out this display device is not 14 feet from a building. It is 12 feet from a building.
I know.
You are a bad man.
And that's what I told them. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to bite myself in the here, but I did say the reason I had busked where I was told not to was because it was inconsistent in its enforcement and application.
You're not going to argue with our men. We're just trying to bring a little law and order to this town.
I tend to stay away from the arguments, actually. But I think the truth needs to be spoken. I'm not argumentative in general.
I wouldn't argue that.
Okay.
We've been talking to
Yehosame Cameron.
Thank you, Yehosame.
Thank you, Robert.
So we're talking with
Carl Kirsch.
Go ahead, Carl.
I have never been a homosexual in my life, and yet there's a bunch of crazy people in this town for years have been calling me homosexual. What is their trip? What are they doing this for? Why do they make up lies about me?
Fair enough.
And I believe in Bible, Quran, and Bhagavad Gita, but not absolutely everything in it. But I found mistakes. Like in the Bible, there's mistakes like Elohim, which means three or more Jehovahs, which is impossible. And then Christian Trinity is a strange occult cult where they contradict themselves. They say, Jesus is Jehovah, Jesus is not Jehovah, things like that.
Let me interrupt you for a moment because you have a sign you're holding here on the corner. Could you summarize it briefly, what it means? You have a lot you were saying on this, but is there anything, any one sentence you think that is most important?
Elijah, Eliyahu, that is, he was a Jew color code. He was not a Jew. The Bible said that. And Elijah, Eliyahu,
He said, which do you worship, Yahweh Eloh or Baal? He didn't say, do you worship Lord God or Baal. He said, do you worship Yahweh Eloh or Baal? Baal, the baby-burning demon of the Canaanites and Phoenicians.
Let me interrupt you again because I wanted to kind of have you sum it up in a sentence, but you've been pressing your concerns on this, your knowledge of this for some time. How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
Since about 84 or 85.
What do you make of the town now?
It's getting worse. It's getting more fascistic. Socialists are getting more fascistic.
And what have you seen that shows
this? This thing is right-wing and left-wing. It's all bullshit. They're getting more fascist, socialist, more dictatorial, more tyrannical.
Have you felt this?
More gangster threatening.
Have you felt this personally yourself?
Yeah.
In what way?
Well, the police kidnapped me from my house December 11th, 2008, and ransacked, looted, robbed, and vandalized my apartment. I lost a lot, about 10,000 papers that I had forged pictures on. They stole, the police stole it, they stole other things. And,
are you indoors still, or?
Yeah, now they got me in their so-called mental illness system. They got me in their system where they give me food, crappy food with Santa Cruz water. I used to have an SSI check. I could buy my own food. But now their crappy food has Santa Cruz water, which has trihalomethane in it, which I'm pretty sure it damages sex organs. And also, they give me these psychiatric pills called Clonopin, Zyprexa, and lithium carbonate that damage my sex organs. I wonder what my words are going to reach, who's going to reach, who's these words are going
to
reach.
This will be, it goes out every Thursday and Sunday, my show. It's hard to say how many people listen to
what
it.
Radio show?
101.3. I'll give you a card when we're finished. You can tune in if you want. Any comments on M.H. Can? You ever been up there? What do you think of them?
I was talking to them. I said, I noticed you may have to sign an agreement. To visit M.H. Can, you have to sign an agreement that says you don't like THC hemp weed, that you will not use THC hemp weed, which is a psychedelic plant, which is hemp, and all cannabis is hemp, whether it has THC or not. And that's what cannabis and hemp have always meant for thousands of years. They're the same. They're the root for the same root word. So the industrial hemp people are wrong in saying that it's not hemp if it has THC in it. They're liars when they say it's narcotic or sedative hypnotic. It's psychedelic. THC hemp is psychedelic.
Well, they in fact require you to say
that. Does not mean hallucinations either.
They require you not to smoke marijuana if you're going to use their service.
Yeah, but they don't require you not to smoke tobacco or drink coffee.
Interesting.
And aspirin and penicillin kill more people than THC hemp weed, according to Jack Herer. The Emperor Wears No Clothes.
I remember the book.
He said that aspirin and penicillin kill more people than THC hemp. THC hemp doesn't kill anybody, as far as you can tell.
And we've been talking.
And I'm not allowed to use THC hemp for years.
Thank you very much.
And I've never been allowed to do sex in 61 years. I've never done sex in 61 years.
Well, time to get busy.
I can't. They damage my sex organs with the pills.
That's a good point.
For more than 5 years, my sex organs have been damaged by the pills. And for crimes I didn't commit, I didn't do anything wrong over at the house I used to live at 150 Canfield, number 4, near Barson, near the Broadway and Ocean intersection. I, 2008, December 11th, they had no reason to vandalize my apartment, the police, and the psychiatric authorities.
We're going
to
leave it there, Carl.
And the psychiatric guy, you can't Raphael Halper. They had no reason to take me in. I wasn't
right,
doing
you,
anything
right,
wrong.
Right, and you said that before, and we've got it. And thank you for talking to us, Carl. She took away the freight train out of the middle of my head and steel. Of Tiger Moon. Their display device says, hey, we are Tiger Moon from Canada, www.tigermoonmusic.com, facebook.com/Tiger Moon Music.
I gotta wake up with the sheets soaking wet and a freight train running through the middle of my head and only you.
So this
and
is
then,
your name, sir.
My name's Dan.
And you are?
Casey.
And you two have been traveling around with your instruments?
Yep, for about 6 months.
And how long have you played in Santa Cruz?
Santa Cruz, about a month.
Have you been arrested for amplified sound yet, or you're playing an amplified machine here?
It's unamplified, but it can be amplified.
Oh, I see. Potentially amplified.
Potentially amplified.
Just keeping an eye on, you know what I mean? We have ordinances in this town.
No, we checked the rules right when we came in. We made sure that we were legal.
On the up and up?
We were all good. I actually had a good conversation with Don Lane last week, Counselor Don Lane, about it. So
almost a contradiction in terms. Amazing.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, and keep up your good work. Actually, you're going to be here for a while? Or?
We're going to be here until Sunday the 6th, and then we're making our way back up north, but we're going to tour back down here in February. I mean, in September.
I mentioned before, you are Tiger Moon. People can find you online there.
Yep, www.tigermoonmusic.com, or just look us up on Facebook.
Or in front of Forever 21, perhaps.
You got it, exactly. Downtown Santa Cruz.
And again, we've been talking with...
My name's Dan.
And, of course, the other aspect of this
beautiful part here, Casey.
Thank you, Dan. Rocking with the Notorious...
Preacher.
And Preacher, here you are. You're using a cane to help you along, and you're sipping, hopefully, your coffee without any tequila in it, we assume.
This is a clover. It's unique to the Starbucks. Something you can't get at the roasting company.
Oh, well, interesting.
Up to date.
And you have quite a... you have sort of a...
Quick flash, Starbucks still discriminates against people with backpacks, as does the roasting company and Lulu Carpenter, as far as I know. But again, Pete seems to have altered its policy, perhaps thanks to the education which some of us activists did downtown in a struggle against backpack bigotry, but perhaps from the basis of what you listeners and others in the community have done in terms of raising the issue and saying, look, you know, we want to buy coffee locally, but not from local bigots.
1940s look with that hat on, I gotta say.
Well, essentially, we're bringing the Salvation Navy together.
I see. And this is a sink or swim, that sort of thing?
Well, essentially, we thought if we got about 60 donated recreational vehicles, we could take the unfortunate out to see the rest of the world and know what they're missing.
Put them on the road, so to speak.
Yeah.
Rubber tramps.
Give them the high life. Who knows, it may cause them to open their eyes and see that perhaps there's more to life than... rescue mission.
Or hanging out looking for the next meal, I know. Well, these are
moving.
You better keep going. Thank you, Preacher. Family struggling in need of help, anything is accepted. Reads the sign of the man in front of the, or near, the coffee roasting company in what is usually the area where Scarf Lady Kate hangs out. He tells me he hasn't seen her in a couple of days. And the funny sign blocking the sidewalk in front of Betty's Juicy Patters at Patty's Hot Buns Eat In Santa Cruz downtown store says dinosaurs didn't eat at Betty's and now they're extinct. Coincidence? Put a big ad for Crown Royal. Please drink responsibly. So we got a booze ad and a large sign on the sidewalk taking up. Well, it's probably, I don't know, 3x3, something like that. Here we have the philosopher of the streets. So what's your name, sir?
My name is Adi Kesavadas.
And what thoughts do you have for us today?
Well, thoughts are irrelevant.
What feelings do you have for us today?
Feelings are also irrelevant. And what? The state of being doesn't need to feel or to think. It transcends all the miseries of feelings. It transcends all the miseries of thoughts. Thoughts are political, dualistic. It separates us from the one reality that we are.
You are a monist yourself. One reality. Mono.
No, you cannot create the attributes to anybody. If it's monistic, it's not an attribute. It's the absolute truth.
So you are speaking the absolute truth?
No.
The relative truth?
No.
The partial truth?
No.
You're just speaking.
What exactly? It speaks through me is the truth, but I'm not a separate entity that you can say that you are speaking.
You aren't suggesting we're all one, are you?
Yes, we are all one.
What kind of commie talk is that?
It's a no commie talk. It's awakening talk. It comes from awareness. It's called common sense, which is not so common anymore.
Voltaire said that as well.
Yeah, so many things has been said. But in the variegatedness of the one absolute, you must realize through your awareness the absolute truth, so it becomes a truth within yourself.
We've been listening to the voice of
Adi Kesavadas.
Thank you, sir. So we're talking with
Robert Stephan.
And Robert, you look you're colorfully dressed. You have some, you know, flashy tennis shoes. You have a sort of a very, how would you describe your vest and your coat?
Oh, actually, I'm wearing a yellow silk jacket with a flower on it. Sweater with a lot of
many colors, yeah.
Multicolored sweater.
Looks almost kind of Tibetan or Himalayan or...
I have no idea. It's kind of a...
Indian, perhaps?
I think it's wintry.
Is it wintry?
I would call it wintry.
Well, it's not very thick, but it is very colorful.
It is colorful. I think of it as a winter sweater, even though we're kind of coming out of winter. Let's see. That's about it. Normally wearing a hat with some sparkles on it.
Well, I notice your hairdo is now sort of a, how would we describe it? You're somewhat balding on the top, and you have nice kind of locks coming down the sides of your hair. And you're not really gray yet. You're just a slight touch of gray.
Well, that's because you don't see my beard.
Oh, yeah. Well, I could well be. You, of course, I first met you when you were running for president back in 1999.
Oh, well, I think that was earlier. 1999, yes, about that time, I guess.
You had a sign, you were in front of Bunny Shoes on a bench.
1999 it was about that time, yes.
Pretty sure, because, I mean, I review these articles. And we've actually written about you in the newspaper Street Spirit. You may remember we published an article, maybe you don't, but it was Becky Johnson wrote about you.
Yes, I recall.
You were the subject of a civil lawsuit where, I guess, Bunny Shoes wanted to remove you because they felt you were disturbing them because you were in front of their store on a bench in the days when it was allowed to be on a bench for more than an hour. Now we do have a time limit on benches.
Oh, there's a time limit now.
There is a time limit now on benches. That wasn't your doing. That happened 10 years later, so I'm not going to blame you for that.
Okay.
But
that seems a little extreme to be.
It's ridiculous. Completely. No city I've ever heard of has an hour limit on a bench, except for Santa Cruz.
Do they have little timers on the side where you can, like,
a meter would be a good idea. It might make a little money for the city, but they haven't done that yet, so.
That's something for them to think about.
Yeah, well, you see, there you are. You're obviously a man who should not just run for president, but run for a city council.
I gave it a thought once,
luckily, Scott escaped you.
Hey, yes, Scott.
He escaped from the city council. In any case, at that time, I remember the city was pursuing you because the Bunny's employees thought you were some kind of a weirdo. Because you had an unusual approach, you were actually inside a large trash bag.
Yes, yes, I was.
And you had also had experienced some severe difficulties out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I now call them, where that you tried to sleep there one night, several nights, and you were arrested for trespass because they didn't have room, and instead of serving you, they served you over to the police.
Yes, that's true as well.
So that's how I initially became to know you, because I work with this Huff group, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Then later, about two or three or four years later, you became a very colorful figure. You would carry an umbrella, dressed all in pink, and walk rather slowly up and down the sidewalk of Pacific Avenue.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that. Mm-hmm.
And what did you learn from that experience, if anything?
That there should be more people dressing any way they choose, and not to worry so much about them.
About what other people think.
Exactly.
Yes. Did you experience much difficulty or harassment or because of this? Because I would imagine you did.
There were a few individuals who apparently don't share the view that other people should be able to dress how they want or
walk at their own speed.
With their own speed, yes. And those people did object at times strenuously to my activities.
Okay. And when did you essentially leave this? You were quite a customary sight on Pacific Avenue, but then after a time, one couldn't find you here anymore.
Yes, I decided to do other things.
But you still live downtown.
I did for a while, but I no longer do.
Is it because of rent concerns or just a desire to move on? Or?
Well, I didn't enjoy where I was living. The
Palomar.
Yeah, the management was, I don't know about that, at least the management that oversaw the direct management was certainly unpleasant, and I was happy to find a better place.
And you did find a better place.
I did.
What, and I say this because I've heard some concerns about the Palomar management myself more recently. What were the kinds of problems you were facing, if you wish to speak about
them? I guess a little bit, but they were mainly very intrusive and rude, and they would, and the manager, they would call me names on a regular basis, and it's kind of difficult to...
Nasty guys, I remember.
Unfortunately, yes.
I mean, we're talking about the same guy. He would come out and just rage at us. We'd do protests on the street nearby.
Probably. Long hair?
I think so, but again, my recollection visually of people is very limited. In fact, I barely recognized you when I saw you.
Okay, well, it's a good thing I was wearing something colorful.
What was your face? I think your eyes. I got that. That brought me back. But you say, do you still walk slowly down on the pier the way you used to, or you just kind of stroll there in the
I'm
usual?
Strolling, not walking at a very slow pace, just
it
walking at a...
quite unique. No one I've ever known, other than possibly statue people who do it as a very kind of form of art, habitually took this approach, which I think may have alienated some people, but certainly endeared you to others.
Yes, I believe it did, and I'm happy to hear that. I thought it would be a fun thing to do, and so I did it.
Well, I've run out of my list of questions. Any you want to comment on or say?
It's a good time to be... to go out and do things in Santa Cruz.
Spring is here.
Yes, it is. Spring is here.
And we've been talking with?
Robert Steffen.
Thank you, Robert.
You're quite welcome.
So that whole interview took place within the New Leaf Market, and I actually just walked out the back door without being ID'd or forced to show a receipt, which I suppose I should find reassuring. But I felt nervous as I approached the door, because I don't like... much as I may seem to get into these kinds of confrontations, I don't like them that much. In any case, I see the security guard is busy marking the tires here in the parking lot.
And those were interviews from April 2nd, earlier, I guess a week or two ago. And it looks like... what I'm going to do now is actually turn to something a bit more recent. Let's see where we're at with that. Again, I want to remind you the phone number is 427-3772 if you'd like to call in. For the last couple of weeks, well, both yesterday and then a week before, more or less, a couple of Huff activists have been out on the banks of the San Lorenzo River, on the levee, on the downtown side of the levee, near the footbridge. And we've been interviewing people, giving them coffee, filling out forms to document their experiences with the police and other authorities. And here's some interviews from that, from those times yesterday, and hopefully I'll be able to find the earlier interviews as well, which have recently eluded me, but I'm going to keep looking.
Watching the bikers bike by it. And we are out here on the levee watching the bikers bike by it. About 10 to 3, two hardcore Huffsters with coffee, bread pudding, and political propaganda right here at the footbridge where homeless folks are generally biking by but not stopping. However, we haven't stopped yet either.
Hey.
So our first customer has rolled up for coffee here on a bike and with a backpack. And let's hear the dialogue between him and... And bread pudding, I might add.
And did anything else happen?
Recently, Micah Posner passed by with a bunch of kids on bikes and said he was really sympathetic about the audio recording problems of, that is to say, the mayor's arrest of me for not leaving the chambers after she had directed me to go because I was audio recording her, where I usually do. And I said, well, all you have to do is say the obvious, but he's too nervous to do that. Oh, no, but I'll talk to the media later, maybe.
Micah Posner is a city council person who sat silently by while I, member of the media, me, was arrested and excluded from city council for placing my tape recorder in the same place I placed it for the last 25 years. The issue may come up again this Tuesday. I'm not sure if that's going to happen again. We'll see what goes on. But Posner has... it's sort of like talking about Steve Plaich. If you kind of reach the point where you realize that some people who you want to act differently just aren't going to act differently. And that is part of the political milieu, the interest in maintaining a kind of respectability and credibility and connection with people in power. And at least that's my analysis. So instead of this council member Posner saying, simply making a simple comment, why are you, what difference does it make whether he has his tape recorder sitting where it is? It's not bothering anybody, and he's always had it there. That simple statement could make I think, a lot of difference, not in changing the mayor's mind, I'm certain it wouldn't, but in letting the community know that there is not just one wild and crazy guy with a tape recorder and a few of his friends who are concerned about this, but that it actually has raised the, you know, the doesn't pass the straight face test, so to speak. In any case, let's hear some. You wanted to say something, Mike?
It sounds to me like Mike Posner is doesn't have the guts to be himself or to speak out differently than anybody else in the council. So he's like a go along whatever the word is.
I think so.
With everyone else,
he did say he
like
would,
a messenger boy.
He did say he would get into this at a press conference, but so far he hasn't done any press conferencing or talking to the media. So. It's always good to know horse shit when you step in it so you can avoid it the next time. Or you know, if it's served up on a plate for you to eat, that you say, no thanks. Yeah.
And I told him it was really important to raise the issue the minute that it was raised at city council where he had some voice. Even if he was ignored or voted down or criticized. But Mike had a smile and he biked on. We're talking with a man we spoke to a week ago. Your name, sir?
Garrett Hahn.
And Garrett, you've gone into what, the Paul Lee Loft?
Correct, the loft.
And has the Armory program ended yet?
The Armory program ended on the 15th, so.
That'll be yesterday.
Yesterday, so there's a good 100 more people out in the street sleeping right now, so.
Have you noticed any change in the climate at the Homeless Lack of Service Center, as I call it, though? Apparently not a lack of service for you, at least in the Paul Lee Loft.
I'm not super happy with them, but I'm not disappointed either. I have got a bed to stay in now, so I'm not complaining.
You've been there for one night?
I've been there for about four nights now.
And how are the conditions there? Give us an idea.
It's actually pretty nice. It's relatively clean. There's not too many people staying up late and keeping everyone awake like the Armory was. But like any other shelter, stuff is getting stolen and there's problems, conflicts, and drama, and people yelling and, you know, going off. Typical stuff.
Is that with the staff or with just the other?
It's with the staff, and it's between, you know, homeless people, of course. There's always one person trying to come up on something for something.
What problems have you seen between staff and homeless that you've noted?
Well, I've noted there's definitely some people that have a grudge against staff, or vice versa, staff having a grudge against some homeless people there. And whether it's all true or not, or made up, or just people kind of salty about a situation, I can't really comment on that. But there are definitely some staff members that aren't as friendly as others.
Staff is mostly African-American?
I would say the majority, yeah.
Is there much racist stuff back and forth, like, you know, nigger, nigger this and nigger, nigger that, that sort of thing?
There was this morning, not on a normal day, but you do periodically definitely see that.
How do the staff, this is from client to staff, right?
Client to staff, yeah.
How do the staff react to that? I mean, there's one, at least two individuals fired from the Homeless Lack of Services Center who are claiming a climate of racial hostility, which is permitted by the management. What do you think?
I would disagree with that. I think it's handled pretty quickly. I don't think there's any racial hostility there at all. Not any more than it's being made of. It's pretty decent there.
So what happened to the fellow who was niggering it up? That fellow was, you know, abusing people.
Well, he was just kicked out. He actually has a problem. He's actually a pretty nice guy. He's very schizophrenic, you know. And he went off this morning and did the nigger that, nigger this, and threatened to kill one of the rent-a-cops or first alarm security guards, and the security guard pushed him a couple times and called the police. So
let me interrupt this and ask you, Michael O'Grady, because you spent last few nights in the Pauley Loft, yeah?
Yes, that's correct.
And I guess my question is, have you seen any confrontations of a racial nature between either clients and staff, clients and clients, or unlikely staff and staff?
Occasionally when things get heated up between two or three people, I have heard people say, you nigger this and you nigger that. But that's overall rare. I mean, it does happen, but it's not. I don't think it's that significant. But what's a lot more significant is that there's at least one person, just one that comes to mind, who is kind of like in charge of the reception desk at the hygiene center where the loft is. And he is very uneducated, very uncouth, very rough, and not pleasant in his approach to people. And he basically shouldn't be there. I'm going to write an objection to find out first who hires people at in the center, and bring it to the notice that you know, there's a lot more educated and more rational people to be hired.
What specific problems have you noted with this person?
Belligerent, uncooperative, just not the right person at all to be in that kind of a position.
The actual question that I was going to raise when I interrupted this account, which we gathered at the Riverside yesterday, that was yesterday, is how much of the hostility that's provoked, either of a racial nature or otherwise, comes from the abuses of authority by the people who are the security guards or the monitors? Is that a large part, a small part? What's your sense of it?
My sense is that it's definitely there, but it's not that significant a big part. There have been people there, like, for instance, he's not there any longer, but one monitor at the Armory Center, the first night I slept near him, he said, "Oh, Grady, I'd like to take you outside and shoot you. I'd like to take you out of the building and shoot you." For no provocative reason.
Because you're so ugly?
I don't know. No provocative reason that I knew. He was like a bully. He's not there anymore. But
how long was he there for?
He was there for a few months. And he started, a campaign against me to move me from that section where I'd been sleeping.
What was his grievance with you?
I never found out. I don't know. But he was basically, if not supported by the other chief head, he who knew about it but did nothing about it. So, that's just an act of cowardice in my mind, that he couldn't control that kind of bullying that goes on there. I do intend to write a letter before I leave to the CEO of the place, just to bring to their attention the fact that some of these people, you give them authority and you watch them change. I think it was Jeff. I think it was one of our presidents says, if you want to know the true character of a person, give him power and observe him.
Yeah.
So it does change people. They go on a trip.
Correct.
They go on a trip,
correct,
a power trip.
Correct.
And
let's leave the philosophy behind, because I haven't got much time here.
Right.
What about the Pauley Loft? Any similar problems there with authority figures who are abusive?
No, overall, I'm happy enough there. I'm a lot happier there than I was in the armory. It's, there are some people there who if you start talking and ask them any kind of intimate questions about their life, they'll get upset and get angry at you.
You mean staff or clients?
Staff too.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
One guy I was who was kind of like staff around there. I was asking him about his family, and he got hostile. So you can't have any kind of.
You better
a deep,
watch your tongue, agree?
Yeah, yeah.
Probing
exactly.
In there. Let's finish this up though, because we're reaching the end of the line.
Right.
Take you over here. They kicked him off the grounds. The police came. They didn't arrest him or anything. They just talked to him for a while and let him go.
And is he going to be returning? Have you had much personal contact with the guards and talked to them about how they feel about this kind of stuff? Are they able to deal with it pretty well? How are they? Is it, you know?
I think it depends on the guard. I think every security guard, some of them are on their high horse and they like to pretend that they're higher than everyone else and better. And there's other ones that are pretty down to earth and relate pretty well. But the one this morning. I have no problems with him. I do see a lot of people having problems with him, so I can't say anything personally against him, but there are definitely some issues between, people at the shelter. And
what's the most frequent thing that causes conflict between security guards and members of the people at the shelter?
Typically, move your bag, move this, don't sleep here, get up, that kind of stuff. They don't seem to really like you to lay around too much around the shelter, which... could be
because you're in the way, or because they want to make a upstanding citizen of you.
I think they want to make more of an upstanding citizen of you,
or a standing up citizen.
Yeah, I just sometimes they don't realize that 7 days a week we got to get up when the sun rises, and we don't really have much option to lay around or rest, from there on out.
And this happens when are you told to get up at times other than at 7?
If you stay at the shelter or the armory, you're told to get up at 5 a.m. or if you're lucky, 6 a.m. And
now that you're at the Pauley Loft, are you told, I'm talking about during the, do these problems we're talking about happen during the night when the Pauley Loft is happening, or do they happen during the day when the day stuff is operating?
They happen from the moment the sun rises pretty much and go all the way to the point when the sun sets, just because there's not many places for people to rest and sit down and enjoy yourselves and get yourselves together. So, you get the people working there telling them to get up and they don't want to get up. And, some people get angry. And
so once people are up, are they allowed to come back and stay during the day, or people kind of...
Once you're up, you're at 6 a.m., that's it for the day. You don't come back until night. So you don't really have a place during the day, but you do have a place to lay your head at night at least. So it's kind of nice, but it's got its disadvantages too.
I see you're carrying your backpack on your back, and that's quite a hefty pack. A little hard to conceal your status. What do you do during the day if you want to go and be served at a coffee shop? Have you suffered discrimination?
In Santa Cruz itself, I can't say I've suffered too much discrimination, but as a homeless person, I have lots of times.
In what places?
Los Angeles, Las Vegas was the worst.
You talked about that.
Yeah, you can't even tell people directions without them, walking away from you. They want nothing to do with you. A little more friendly in Santa Cruz, but I've seen a little bit out here too. People just typically don't want to associate themselves or want to think they can even understand you if you're homeless.
I asked this last week, but it's been a week. Any discrimination in any of the cafes?
No, nothing to really know. I had more last week, but the week's been pretty smooth for me, I guess.
Well, that's good. That's not bad.
Yeah, I've been kind of laying low, trying to stay out of trouble.
Well, we've been talking with
Garrett Hahn.
Anything you want to add, Garrett?
Nope.
You should be on Free Radio maybe tomorrow night.
All right, sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, man. We're talking with a diminutive woman of with white hair, grayish hair, and sunglasses, who is having the last of her bread pudding and coffee here. What's your name?
My name is Joan.
Are you outside, Joan, or inside?
I am outside and glad of it.
And are you outside at night?
No, I'm inside.
You have housing.
I have housing, yeah.
And has that been hard for you in Santa Cruz, or has it been fairly? Is the rent fairly reasonable?
We own a house.
Wow. Has the bank been generous?
No, because we bought it so long ago that that
one of the lucky few. Pre-Proposition 13.
Yeah, we're some of the lucky few. Yeah.
Wow. And you've been here then for decades.
Yeah, right.
And
I haven't, but my husband has. I married well.
No ho. So you married up into the Santa Cruz elite, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
For 2 years now. I came from Salinas, which is, quite a different demographic.
A racial mix. Santa Cruz is pretty honky. A little Hispanic thrown in.
Right.
The occasional black person.
Yeah, we have, in Salinas, we have about 70 to 80% Mexican-American.
Uh-huh.
And
¿Tú hablas español?
Sí, hablo español. ¿Cómo
bueno, yo no.
Yeah. Yes. Si yo quiero... Quiero amigos en Salinas. Hay que hablar español.
You want to have friends in Salinas, you better speak Spanish.
Yeah. Not really, but I do.
Yeah. So, what have you noticed here in Santa Cruz about the homeless compared to the homeless in Salinas?
Salinas doesn't have that many homeless, although we have Dorothy's Place.
I heard about that.
Dorothy's Place is a wonderful, wonderful place.
I know there was an encampment that was near Dorothy's Place. It was sort of torn out by the city. That was last year, I think. Or perhaps the year before.
I'm not sure. I haven't been following. I'm sorry to say I haven't been following homeless politics. But one of my best friends does here in Santa Cruz.